Beatles.
Those circuses on the air.
And the president doesn't.
Sometimes you feel like a...
That means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you
tear down this wall.
Here's Johnny.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Charles has been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
In time, and the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
And good morning to you, Mr. Dave Schwann.
Hey, good morning, Dave.
The official passing of the baton has happened.
It has.
There was no fight, no argument. Nope. I saw nobody
nope,
getting
was,
hurt.
There was not a coup d'etat.
Nice. Ooh, I like it. I like it. How was your day? How was your weekend, buddy?
Well, I'll tell you, you could not order better weather yesterday. It was
gorgeous.
I was here yesterday morning, and then yesterday afternoon I was telling Roger I had some time to take a walk down to a park in my neighborhood that's kind of hidden away. You know, you have to really get there on foot more than by car.
Mm-hmm. Tell them the name of the park.
Oh, it's the name of the park is called Cottontail Park, by
Isn't
the way.
Isn't that cute?
Yes, it is.
I went down there, and it was perfect. There were some people at the other end having a picnic, a couple of kids playing, and I found a bench and fell asleep.
And a bottle.
And no, I didn't have a bottle. I didn't. That came later. But
that's nice. Wow, what a nice
so
relaxing
it was just
afternoon.
Beautiful. It was just beautiful.
We had a nice day as well. I was mentioning in the earlier part of the show that my son did a savage race, which was a 27.
A what?
It's a 27-point obstacle course, and like you're signing all this paperwork like you could die if you go through this course. Even as a spectator, they're like, you know, if you're doing this, you know, this is a risk and all this stuff. But he did it. He did it in pretty good record time with one of his buddies. And then we spent the day on the lake, and I just
so that's how you got the tan.
Yeah, it was more than a tan. I was just telling Camille, I just walked to the bathroom a little while ago, and I went, oh, no.
Yikes.
Yeah. Yeah, like a lobster. I'm in bad shape. Yeah, I really am.
Well, that was me 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know it takes a while.
But we're enjoying it, and that's all that matters. And mm-hmm. We're still in the middle of the summer. It's only July, for God's sake.
I know. Brian Noonan was in last week for Dean and was mentioning that people were saying to him, summer's almost gone. And
I
heard it on TV yesterday evening, too.
Yeah.
No, we've got a lot of nice weather ahead of
us. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Absolutely. I don't even really consider the weather changing until like the end of October. Like
that's
I still
right.
feel pretty
that's right.
good about all
I
that stuff.
I love fall.
Yeah.
I'm a big fall guy.
And you know, I say this without my kids listening, you know, it is like 3.5 weeks until school starts or something. So it stinks. But and you know, kids going to college and stuff, whatever. But I mean, we're still in the midst of summer. Fall doesn't start until September. So
kids are starting
enjoy
much
it
earlier.
While you can. Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, we didn't start till
Labor Day.
At or around Labor Day, yeah. Yes.
I don't even want to talk about it. It's July. It's
now
July. Yes.
It's the middle of August.
Way too early. Way too early.
Well, I guess another way of looking at it is they get out around Memorial Day then, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
For summer vacation?
Yeah, Josh. even a week before. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Which is lovely. So we're just enjoying
He's having
it.
Quite a summer, isn't he?
You know, I tell you, all the kids are. My daughter's up further north at another lake, and I can't remember the name of the lake, but it's up north with my cousin. So the kids are really having a blast this summer.
Yeah,
and then my little guy's having his...
got his birthday going.
You know, we've got another weekend of, this is his friends at school, mostly, that are getting together, about 12 kids, and they're doing a little nature center thing. So I got to be up at 9:30. So, yes. I'm going to be sleeping. I don't know how you sleep quickly, but that's what I feel like I have to do.
Yeah, I know. That's a good
home.
Question.
Yeah,
how
yeah.
do you sleep
yeah,
quickly?
Exactly.
All right, what do we have here?
Well, we've got some history, but, you know, I wanted to mention there was a actress, comedian, that passed away this week that not a lot of people I think it's not a household name, but her name was Patty Deutsch.
Patty died?
Yeah, Patty died. She was
on a lot of game shows. She was.
Last season of Laugh-In was the big one. She was in the last season of Laugh-In, but she, you know, in the 1970s, she was in Match Game. So Johnny Olson would mention.
That's right, Match Game, yeah.
And Patty Deutsch. And,
right.
And she'd do this deadpan look to the camera like she was just miserable. And that was kind of, and that was kind of her thing. And she was only 73. She was a young woman. But started working with in a comedy troupe, an improv comedy troupe, where so many get started, with Fred Willard. Let's see here. Who else? Yeah, Laugh-In, of course. And then it's probably a decade on...
she was a mainstay on...
Yeah, Match Game, Match Game. Tattletales.
Yeah, all those game shows, right.
But then she did The Love Boat, she did Murder, She Wrote, and then she became a big voiceover actress. So she was doing, like, the Smurfs in the 80s and 90s and stuff like that. Yeah,
okay, gotcha.
So that's how she kept...
Yeah. She was on Love Boat?
She was...
Everybody was
everybody. I'm sure she met Charo at some point on Love Boat, for goodness sakes.
Charo.
You know, I actually, you know, once in a while on a Sunday, if I'm flipping around and it's raining, I'll stop on the Love Boat. And although some of it was good, it's really not a good show.
Well, it's you know, Dave, it was a show of very much of its time and place.
It was.
So when you watch it now, you think, oh, boy, this is
with dated. A lot of entertainers that careers were pretty much done at that point. They were, and I wasn't saying that they're, you know, they were scraping the bottom of the barrel. I mean, it was big names at the time. It was like Steve Allen and Jane Meadows. And,
right. But they would bring in those names as guest appearances to bring in the audience.
Yeah, exactly.
And it worked.
It worked very well. Mm-hmm. It worked very well. 1821, the first edition of the Saturday Evening Post, which published really regularly until 1969. And for it traces its roots back to Benjamin Franklin. The Post mirrors cherished American ideals and values, mostly memorable and illustrated by artist Norman Rockwell.
I love his stuff.
It's fabulous. And, you know, anytime I see like an old magazine store or stand, I love paging through those and seeing some of the just the incredible covers, but the cool ads that are in there, too, because they're so vintage.
Two things about Norman Rockwell's illustrations for that. Number one, you know, you know who did it just by the looks of the people, the color, and, you know, just the way they appear. But there's a lot of detail in those.
Yeah.
When you can look around, you know, just don't look at the cover and say, oh, isn't that cute? There's a lot going on in there.
There is.
Some of them are funny. Some of them are very profound.
But, I mean, it's pure art. Like, these things should, you know, and some of them do, are hanging in prominent museums.
Exactly. They are. Yeah. I had the pleasure of meeting his daughter.
Oh, that's cool.
At what is now the Chicago History Museum, when they used to call it the Chicago Historical Society.
Yep.
They had an exhibit there. This is 20-some years ago now or more, but... very nice lady, some family resemblance. You could tell that, you know, she was related to Mr. Rockwell. But it was, I really like his stuff.
Don't they have the painting of him doing the Marshall Field's clock, setting the clock in the Chicago History Museum, I think?
They might, yes.
I don't think it's at Macy's. Yeah. I think it's there.
Yeah, the original, you mean.
The original.
Right,
Beautiful.
No, I love his stuff.
Beautiful art, absolutely. 1882, and this is a gas station that generation has lost on, Standard Oil. Is established. It was an American oil producing, transporting, refining, and marketing company. Established in 1870 as a corporation, Ohio is the largest oil refiner in the world. And I remember that Standard sign. That was my first credit card, I think, was the gas card for Standard, and then Amoco. It was owned by John D. Rockefeller, and now it got sucked up into BP.
Oh, yeah. That was another thing that happened 20 years ago. Went through three different variations. Standard Oil, of course, is the way it started. Then it was American Oil, and then Amoco.
I must have missed American. Okay.
Yeah, and then it was Amoco. And then finally, with the Amoco, what do you call it? You're the businessman. The Amoco imprint.
The logo.
Yeah, the logo.
The icon. Yeah,
everything
the brand.
Went, you know, well, the company, too, of course, was bought up by BP. Late 1990s is when that happened. But... you know, by and large, Amoco headquartered in Chicago. What is now the Aon building?
Yes, right.
That was the Amoco building.
Standard Oil building.
Yep.
When Lori said to me about, I don't know, a couple months ago, right before summer started, she said, I want a new thermometer outside, like, you know, for, you know, temperature. I just put it on Alex's little playhouse. And You know, so I went on eBay and I found a Standard Oil in the box from the early 70s, late 60s, maybe.
Oh, yeah, sure.
In the box,
gosh,
in
that's
mint
right.
condition.
They would sell those. Yeah.
But for like $8. Like,
really?
I did not pay anything
you had to
for
get
it.
That, then.
So I got it, and it came in the mail. And she's like, what's this? And I said, it's a thermometer. She goes, can't you get anything normal? Can't you just go to Ace Hardware, True Value, and go buy? Oh, yeah, it works perfectly. It's never been used. I love that stuff. I still have my grandmother's thermometer. She had in her window since my dad was a kid, and we have it in our window in the kitchen. She just wanted one outside when she was playing in the yard, but it's in the window of the kitchen in the kind of the same place my grandmother had it in her house, and it still works. And my dad's
it's a family heirloom, man.
From the 1940s, and the company that made it still makes them. So I anytime I need to like update and buy a new bracket or whatever, I can find it at my local hardware store. It's
amazing.
There
you go.
But yeah, my Standard Oil thermometer, very excited.
That's not going anywhere.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. 1911, Lucille Ball was born in Jamestown, New York, 106 years ago.
Jeez, isn't that something?
Yeah, you know what? And what's funny is, you know, every summer we watch some classic stuff and we pick, you know, Dick Van Dyke or Genie or Bewitched or All in the Family or, you know, some staple. We're watching a lot of Happy Days this summer, and we're watching The Wonder Years, and we're watching a little The Lucy Show, which I haven't seen, I have to say, in a couple of decades.
There's one that's kind of dated.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's with Mr. Mooney. It's The Mooney Years.
Well, he makes it fun.
Dale Gordon makes it fun. Jack Benny was a plumber with Bob Hope in one of them. I mean, they're really classic, fun episodes. But she did I Love Lucy, The Lucy Show, The Lucy Desi Comedy Hour, Here's Lucy. Did Life with Lucy in the 80s. She did, the Bob Hope specials, movies, Broadway, dramatic roles, and so forth. She was an absolute legend. And I've got a little clip just to make you smile. Here's Lucille Ball.
Do you watch yourself? Do you watch the early I Love Lucy?
No, I never have really watched them. Recently, I've caught some of them in a virtual.
This is Lucy and Barbara Walters.
Well, I feel it was a funny-looking hairdo and a funny-looking skirt, and I look like I was forever pregnant because I was either having one or just getting rid of one. But
that's nice.
I know that they were well written and
getting
we had a wonderful time doing them, and I think it shows. That is the essence of our comedy, those early I Love Lucy, and gave me my education and the whole thing.
Did you have trouble selling those first I Love Lucy?
No, we didn't have trouble selling them because we were...
I mean, the concept. I'd heard that when you first came to CBS with the Cuban band leader and...
Well, they didn't want to buy Desi as my husband. Yeah. And I said, why not? He is. And I said, well, Cuban, and we want an American. So we got together and went out in Vaudeville for a few weeks to see how they accepted us. And they did. And when I came back, I insisted, that's all. I said, I expected to only do the show for a year and then have some... like home movies to show the baby that I had just had, you know, when she grew up. And
it was a television show. They taped it on real film, which was one of the first shows to do that. And they really served as memories of growing up and that time of her life.
Well, there was good material for the shows then.
That was fabulous.
Yeah.
That
by the way, just one quick trivial note.
Yeah.
She's also in a Three Stooges episode.
She is. It's the football one.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a blonde, tall and skinny.
Yeah.
Really in the beginning. And she's kind of a smart aleck.
Right. There's three women there with the football promoters and the managers. And
I think that was like 1935. So think about that.
It's an early Stooges
16 years
one.
Before Lucy. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, way before I Love Lucy. Way before that.
Yeah.
She did a lot of work in radio, too.
She was an RKO girl. Yeah,
that's
she
right.
My
she
favorite
was an
husband.
RKO girl. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. 1924 comic strip Little Orphan Annie by Harold Gray debuted and syndicated by the Chicago Tribune. It retired back in 2010, but it was also a radio program. Here's a little listen.
Who's that little chatterbox? The one with pretty auburn locks. Whom do you see? It's Little Orphan Annie.
You know, I always think about that because I see in the hallways here that WGN used to have an organ.
Yes.
And you know that the organ was a big part of radio stations. I mean, you had a radio studio, you had a microphone, you had an organ.
Right. Well, that was probably the most practical way. You know, they didn't have to hire a lot of musicians. They hire one good organist to make it happen, and they did. Although WGN Radio did have an orchestra.
Bob Trendler.
Back. Yeah, Bob Trendler. And I think there was someone before Bob Trendler. But
Bob took over in the mid-30s and then did it through the early 60s. And then he was the big top band director for Bozo Circus.
Yeah. You know, having grown up with Bob Trendler and his big top band on Bozo, and then hearing some, you know, programs from the archives of WGN some years later, and you hear Carl Grayson or somebody say, our musical direction is with Robert Trendler.
Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
He just died a couple years ago.
Yes.
He was like 100 almost.
Was he really?
99 or 100 years old.
Oh, man.
Yeah, good for him. 1944, Anne Frank arrested in Amsterdam by German security police following a tip-off from an informer who was never identified. A decade later, American Bandstand in 1957 begins network TV from 52 to 1989. Was hosted by Dick Clark. What do we have here? What is the clip of Camille?
It's Dick Clark, This Is Your Life.
Oh, let's take a little listen to this. Yeah.
Dick Clark, This Is Your Life, the life of one of today's outstanding television personalities. As master of ceremonies of two nationally televised record and dance shows, American Dance Band on weekdays from Philadelphia, and the Dick Clark Show.
Oh, so this is way back when he was still in Philadelphia only.
Weekly audience of,
wasn't a national show.
Say 50 million Americans at least.
Oh, man.
You receive 50,000 letters a week from your teenage fans, which you answer through your Sunday column in This Week magazine. Circulation almost 12 million. Frankie Avalon.
You sneaky devil, you. Mr. Edwards, I'll always be grateful to Dick for the faith he had in me. And when things weren't going so well, Dick played a record of mine, Dee Dee Dinah, and that was on a Thursday, and on a Monday, I was on my way. So, and also, Dick isn't just a maker of hit records. He's a real good friend and a counselor for teenagers. And he also directed Fabi and me into a career in motion pictures.
You're supposed to be making a motion picture right now. What are you doing here?
Yes, Guns of the Timberland.
Consummate businessman.
Right now. Thanks.
Really quickly on Dick Clark. I met Dick, it was back in the mid-2000s. I was out in California with Bruce Dumont for the Broadcast Museum, and he was ready to sell Dick Clark Productions, and one of his right-hand guys was on our board, and we went through his office and kind of handpicked some things we wanted for the museum. And it was a brief meeting. It was a house, though. That's where Dick Clark Productions is. It's in this big kind of log cabin-ish-looking house down in Hollywood. But it was one of the most memorable. I mean, this guy, you think about this guy, how many careers he jump-started, started, people he founded, directed. I mean, Dick Clark was the man at the time.
Yeah, and also another thing to think about is you're absolutely right about the careers, but also he was starting to play music by white musicians and black musicians.
Yeah, right. Grunge.
And there was an interracial audience on national television. That was a barrier that was there for a long time, and he was instrumental in helping to break that.
Television legend, one of the top, absolutely. 1970, Poppin' Fresh was trademark registered by the Pillsbury Company and the Little Dough Man. Let's take a listen.
Say hello to Poppin' Fresh Dough. It's such a nice feeling to bake something fresh.
Poppin' Fresh Danish Rolls. Danish rolls just taste better when you bake them up fresh and hot. Try Pillsbury Danish in the dairy case.
It's such a nice feeling, get to know Poppin' Fresh Dough.
There it is. We needed to hear that.
We had those in our house.
Absolutely. Same here. 1974, U.S. President Richard Nixon announces he'll resign from office. Let's take a listen.
To leave office before my term is completed is abhorrent to every instinct in my body. But as president, I must put the interests of America first. America needs a full-time president and a full-time Congress, particularly at this time with problems we face at home and abroad. To continue to fight through the months ahead for my personal vindication, would almost totally absorb the time and attention of both the President and the Congress in a period when our entire focus should be on the great issues of peace abroad and prosperity without inflation at home. Therefore, I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
So that was it, and that was on August 9th. I'm actually off next week, so I wanted to play a couple of these things in advance. 1988 was the last thing on our list here. The first ever night game in professional baseball took place nearly 60 years earlier on May 2nd, 1930, when a Des Moines, Iowa team hosted Wichita for a Western League game. Evening games soon became popular. The major leagues, though, took 5 years to catch up with their own small-town counterparts. For 74 seasons, the Cubs played only day games at home, and finally on August 8th, 1988, the Cubs played the Phillies in the first night game ever. Let's take a listen.
I'm Jack Brickhouse, and I'll be your master of ceremonies for this historic first game at night ever to be played at Wrigley Field.
Kind of cool that Jack did it.
Who else?
It was 88. He's retired by now.
Oh, yeah.
We direct your attention to the on-deck circle next to the Philadelphia Phillies dugout as the Wrigley Field lights will be officially turned on.
And there you have it. The lights turned on. And actually, there's a new Brickhouse restaurant now at Wrigley Field. Just debuted. I went Monday night.
I saw your pictures from that.
Yeah, very excited for Pat and excited for Jack that his legacy not only lives on in front of the Tribune Tower here, but also
at Wrigley.
At Wrigley Field. We'll be right back.